Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Aspen Hill conference call with portfolio manager Mr. Sandy Liang. At this time, all lines are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for a question. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this call is being recorded, and I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Lindsay Arkin. Please go ahead.
Welcome everyone, and thanks for joining us this afternoon. Sandy is the portfolio manager for the Aspen Hill Strategic Yield Fund, as well as the AHF Credit Opportunities Fund, which is his OM hedge fund. Before I turn it over to Sandy for an update, I'm going to provide a brief overview of his funds for anyone who's not familiar with them. The Aspen Hill Strategic Yield Fund's objective is to provide investors with a high yield by investing in fixed income securities of corporate issuers located in Canada and the U.S. The fund is actively managed and its focus is on asset value protection, with the priority being the return of principal. The fund pays a fixed monthly distribution of 4.25 cents, which is about a 5% yield per annum at the current NAV. Compared to the strategic yield fund, Sandy's hedge fund, the Credit Opportunities Fund, is a more concentrated product that has fewer positions with larger weights and focuses on Sandy's best ideas. It can also have a slightly higher equity exposure. I'd now like to turn it over to Sandy for an update and his outlook.
Thanks, Lindsay, and thanks for calling in today. So I am going to talk about three things today. First of all, I'll do a review of the performance of the fund and of the various asset classes. And secondly, I'll talk about a little bit about China and commodities exposure. And third, I'm going to talk about some of the ideas that we have in our new presentation, which our wholesalers are armed with. With that, point number one, review of performance and of the fund. This year to date, it's not really apparent day by day, but stocks have really been the place to be. And the return this year to date for the S&P 500 at 4.5%, that's a total return, it kind of masks the volatility that we've seen because the year started off volatile and then kind of grinded higher a little bit, and then there's been some volatility in the last month and a half or so related to events in Europe, but on balance, stocks are up 4.5% in the States. Second place in terms of the major asset classes we look at, high yield debt has provided a positive return this year. It's also been, the ETFs have been relatively volatile, but the asset classes actually return between 1% and 2% depending on which ETF you're looking at. And investment-grade corporate debt, this is interesting, investment-grade corporate debt, so that's higher credit quality corporate debt, has actually lost 2%. So I'm talking about the LQD, which is the largest ETF for investment-grade corporate debt. The symbol is LQD, has lost 2%, and long-term treasuries have lost 5%. And I'm talking about the TLT, which is the massive treasury ETF in the States. So the bottom line is it still makes sense to have earnings risk rather than interest rate risk, and bonds have not been the place to be this year, and in that context, actually, high yield has returned positively. So in terms of strategic yield, the F class is up 4.8% this year to date. June was slightly negative, but July so far is positive, and we are, you know, the way we're positioned, we continue to have a pretty high internal yield. The internal yield right now is in the mid 8% range. And the way we're positioned, we're trying to have a little bit less interest rate risk. So we don't have a lot of double Bs. We have a lot of single B rated paper. And that kind of dovetails into my next topic, because we also don't have a lot of exposure to energy. And we have some materials exposure or commodity exposure, but we've taken it down since last fall. And actually, we don't have any exposure at all to copper. Our energy exposure is down to 5%, and that was from a high of 12% last year. And our energy exposure is mostly, it does not really include any E&P. We have some refiners that have crude oil as an input. We have some MLP exposure, which would be energy infrastructure. But we don't really have any classic, you know, oil and gas, oil, natural gas exploration and production. So energy is down to 5% in our top holdings. Mining is down to 5%. It was 7%. So in terms of other commodity exposure on the materials side, we do have a little bit of coal, a little bit of aluminum, and we have some steel, and you know, we have one of those, each of those in our top holdings, and they have been somewhat volatile. So in volatile markets, when things trade down, we really have to retest our thesis in terms of re-examine why we are lending money to some of these companies. And one of our more volatile names is it's actually a Canadian company called SR Algoma, and it used to be Algoma Steel. SR Algoma has one facility in Sault Ste. Marie, which is actually a low-cost steel integrated steel mill. And not only is it a low-cost producer, but the debt that we're invested in, which has a relatively high coupon, it's actually first lien. It's first lien debt, 9.5% of 2019. And we're secured. So, you know, the way we look at the steel mill is I think there's a very low chance of us not getting our money back in 2019. Behind us, so we're first lien secured debt. Behind us, there is a subordinated debt tranche or an unsecured debt tranche with a 14% coupon. And then behind that is preferred equity and then common equity that's owned by an Indian billionaire family called the Royas. And if you know this company at all, you'll know that last year they actually restructured their debt, where the debt that we're in was the old first lien debt, and it basically came out intact, and the Royas actually put more equity into the company. And given the net worth of this family, we believe that they're very supportive of Algoma, given that they're pretty much a global steel conglomerate, and this is their North American operation. So the point is that we do have some energy exposure, and it's been volatile, but you know, when the stuff trades down, we go and re-examine our thesis, and we're not always right, but you know, we have situations that have traded down, and we feel comfortable with where they are. And the thing about high-yield debt is that as the price goes down, your yield goes up. So as long as you end up getting paid back, your actual return profile looks more attractive as the price goes down. So, you know, we also own some aluminum. We've talked about Century Aluminum in the past. Century Aluminum, the symbol is Cenex, and obviously aluminum as a commodity has been very volatile, especially because of what's going on in China, in that even in the aluminum industry, there is a lot of low-cost production in China that's actually been dumping steel really, you know, into the States and internationally, because the capacity utilization hasn't changed a lot, but at the same time, China's aluminum needs are not what they used to be. But having said that, this is a cyclical business like any, and we think that there's high-cost production coming out. Century Aluminum is a public company, and we basically own the only debt in the capital structure, and they have almost as much cash as debt, and the equity market cap of the company is pretty much four times what our debt is. So that just gives you an indication, even after the stock has been cut in half, there's a lot of value in this company that's behind us. So in terms of my conclusion, we have brought down our commodities exposure, we've brought down our energy exposure. And if we met earlier this year, you know, one of the themes when we were doing that one of our themes was that we talked about how we thought that what's going on in China is quite opaque in terms of the official statistics. But having said that, China is definitely slowing its economic growth rate. And what's interesting is that the catalyst for the commodity complex trading down recently has been what's gone on in the Chinese stock market, with the Shanghai Composite well off its highs, but still up over 20% this year. So no one really cared when the Shanghai Composite was going up, but people care when it's coming down. And you know, the reality is that the Chinese stock market is probably not representative of actually what's going on in China, in that it's a very immature market, and it may not truly be a market, and now the government is in there trying to change the outcome. But the point is that I think China remains opaque in terms of the official statistics, but the intelligence that we get, people we meet with, just sounds like the infrastructure build in China is done, and that could put pressure on commodities for a while. So, you know, we're not at zero weight because it's a big part of the high-yield universe, but we're definitely underweight, and we're picking our spots in the commodity-related businesses. So the last thing I want to talk about is here at Aston Hill, we've revamped the presentation we use to market the Strategic Yield Fund because what I found, and if we've met before, you know that I have been back in Canada working at Aston Hill since 2011, but I spent most of my career in New York. And what I found coming from New York back to Toronto is that Canadians as a whole are very underrepresented in high yield, but what's more interesting is Canadians as a whole seem to be very concentrated in certain products to get income. And in the last year, actually this year to date, the Canadian preferred market is down over 10%, and I think that's, you know, there's various reasons why. I think one of the culprits is definitely Bank of Canada policy, but in terms of preferreds, I mean, the whole market is down over 10%, and, you know, it just goes to show you if you get involved in illiquid asset class to get your income, then bad things can happen when everyone's going the same way. And just for background, the Canadian preferred market has a relatively small number of issuers and is only a $60, $70 billion market, whereas the U.S. high-yield market is a $2 trillion market and is actually bigger than the whole Canadian mutual fund universe. So you know, our new presentation is geared towards, I guess, spreading the gospel of the fact that you have many places to get your income. You don't have to stay in Canada. And the high-yield market is it's basically a market now where the market in aggregate is yielding 7%, and the risk level is significantly less than equities. In fact, we found it to be 40% less than equities, and we've run those numbers, and that's consistent with what other dealers have come up with. So I encourage you to contact your wholesaler and have a look at this presentation. There's some slides that show the risk-reward in various income asset classes, so it lays out preferreds, government debt, dividend-paying equities, and it expresses the risk as a multiple of S&P risk, but also talks about interest sensitivity as well. And as everyone knows, we talked a lot about interest sensitivity, and you've seen the case in point this year where the U.S. long bond has a higher yield, and so it's been very bad for investment-grade corporate debt. It's been very bad for treasuries, but high yields return positively, and actually in the history of the asset class, when rates have gone up, high yield total return has been roughly the same as when rates are not going up. So it's not just us saying that. In the presentation, we have some excerpts from research from Credit Suisse, research from Goldman Sachs, and from J.P. Morgan, and they all say the same thing right now in terms of if you're going to be in fixed income, single B-rated bonds seem to be the sweet spot because you have a high coupon cushioning you from any potential raise in any potential increase in rates, and at the same time, because there's a lot of credit spread as the U.S. economy improves, then that's good for your credit quality. And also in the presentation, we have some slides that show you what's going on in the U.S. economy. So a little bit of a plug, but there's some new ideas in our presentation, and really, you know, the idea is to help our clients, which would be financial advisors, make some money for their clients in terms of higher outcome, better returns, less risk, and really just finding a better place to get your income than some of the old ideas. So that's our idea. Those are the ideas in the presentation. And with that, I'm going to stop it there and take any questions you might have.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Should you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. One moment, please, for your first question.
Hi, Sandy. It's Lindsay here. While we wait for our listeners to queue up, we have a couple questions that we've just been sent in that I'll take a chance to ask you now. So the first is, year-to-date, you're outperforming the U.S. high-yield ETFs. How have you managed to do that?
Well, the ETFs are interesting because, you know, they're quite volatile, and sometimes when the markets go up, they will go up more than the aggregate market, and when the markets are going down, they'll go down more. And that's probably because the whole high yield market is roughly 4,000, 4,500 bonds, and the ETFs will sample 400 to 500 bonds and try to mimic the return of the whole market. And by doing that, they're buying and selling the same bonds. So I think we've managed to outperform this year by outperforming in a down market, first of all. But second of all, I know that our energy weighting has been much lower than the indices, and energy in the last couple months has been, actually in the last month, has been hit quite hard. Mining has been hit quite hard. And also, we have shied away from double Bs, where single Bs have actually outperformed double Bs this year to date, and we've wanted to be less interest sensitive. So those would be the reasons why.
Perfect. Your cash balance at the end of June was about 4%. What are your intentions with the allocation? Is it to keep it the same or to raise it a bit?
Actually, our cash balance is a little bit higher than that right now. It's around 7%, but so, you know, we like to keep some dry powder for sell-offs, but having said that, we like the market right now. There's a lot of companies that we want to lend money to and make high coupons where we can make equity-like returns being senior to the equity. You know, another concept that came from our presentation, or that is in our presentation, is a concept that within the TSX, if you were to put a credit rating on every company in the TSX S&P index, right now more than 60% would be high yield. So within that 60%, there's companies that are already issuing high yield debt, companies like Valiant and First Quantum and Air Canada and Bombardier. There's a lot of household names that people own a lot of the equity in Canada that are actually high yield debt issuers. But on top of that, over 60% of the TSX is high yield debt.
Okay, and the last question we have before we open it up to any questions from our listeners is, can you comment on interest rates both in Canada and the U.S.?
Sure. You know, rates have had a real risk-on, risk-off characteristic recently. But, you know, also in our presentation, we talk about the fact that, you know, one factor we think that, well, first of all, just to back up, the context is that we think we're in a low interest rate world, and we're going to continue to be in a low interest rate world. And even if the 10-year in the States, which is roughly 240 right now, even if that goes to 3% or to 4%, which wouldn't be such a bad outcome for this asset class, we're still in a low interest rate world. And I think that we're going to continue to be in a low interest rate world because there's a variety of reasons, but the two major reasons are, number one, the economic growth trend. The economic growth everywhere in the world is generally off the trend line. So prior to the credit crisis, there was a certain trend line, but since then, the rate of recovery has been very slow. It's been very slow in the U.S. It's obviously been slow in Europe, where it's just emerged really from a very long recession. And we know what's happening in China. So with economic growth off the trend line, it's not clear when there's going to be a real big demand for capital in terms of companies expanding. And second of all, and this is something we talk about in the presentation, with demographics, there's a much higher ratio of savers to borrowers developing. And we've had correspondence with an economics professor at the Fraser Institute. His name is Michael Walker, and he wrote an interesting article in the Financial Post in January, which caught our eye, where he did a study that showed that the ratio of savers to borrowers, and this is across many different countries that represent 90% of the GDP in the world, but the point is that the ratio of savers to borrowers is a huge determinant of interest rates. And if you look at where the planet as a whole is going, with the aging population, it just looks like the whole world is going to be looking like another Japan in 3 or 4 years. So these things don't move quickly. Obviously, we're talking about demographics, but I just don't see the factors in place that are going to make rates go anywhere quickly anytime soon. And that's why the reason we put that in our presentation is because it just speaks to the fact that you really need to find places to find your income. You need to find diversified sources of income, and high yield really fits the bill.
Perfect. Thanks, Sandy. I'll pass it back to the operator to take any questions we might have from our listeners.
Thank you. There are no questions at this time.
Okay, thanks everyone for calling in. If anyone does have a question for Sandy, you can contact your wholesaler or you can call Aston Hill directly and ask to speak with the sales team. Next week's call will be with John Kim, Portfolio Manager of the Aston Hill Canadian Total Return Fund and the newly appointed Portfolio Manager for the Aston Hill Capital Growth Fund and Opportunities Fund. Thanks again, everyone, and have a great evening.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes your conference call for today. We thank you for participating, and we ask that you please disconnect your lines.